that swayed the elf. If there was to be any hope for the realm, an alliance between their two shores would have to be forged. "First we cremate the dead," Tygon said. "Then we travel south, to Velia." Caleb Jordain let out an obnoxious burp and threw his bottle aside. "I still get paid, though, right?" Chapter 24. Unwelcome Guests. After the sun rose, Asher approached the gates of Karath on foot and bade the others to follow his lead, each pulling their horse by the reins. The ranger was always thinking ahead, anticipating his target's perception, and he knew how intimidating the group appeared without setting upon the gates astride their mounts. If the Karathan guards felt vulnerable, they would likely turn hostile and call for reinforcements. Asher knew that avoiding violence in the arid lands was impossible, but he at least wanted to be inside the capital first. The dusky road that led from the main gates was usually sparse of life. Asher had visited the city many times in his life, and knew the area to be busy with trade, either stalls or moving caravans. The ranger didn't like it. "Something isn't right," Selim said, close to his ear. Asher nodded his head in agreement, and glanced at Nathaniel and Rayner, a silent warning. They were a group of fighters all, so there was no point in hiding their weapons and concealing their armor. Even the dumbest of soldiers would be able to assess the threat they posed. The ranger cautiously entered through the large gates, left entirely ajar by their keeper. Karath's doors were usually open, and so the sight didn't bother Asher too much. But the absence of any guards was alarming. People could be seen milling around, going about their day, but the outer edges of the city were relatively deserted. "Is there a festival?" Glade asked. "No," Selim replied from behind his scarf, pulled up to hide his mouth. "Karathans do not celebrate the harvest of Ymira. It is too quiet." Asher walked up to the first person who didn't run from the sight of him. "Excuse me," he asked in the language of the arid lands. "Where is everyone?" The young woman hesitated with her answer, dwelling for a moment on the assorted company before her. "Most have gone to the palace. Emperor Faro is addressing the traitor." "Traitor?" Selim asked first. Asher turned back to the young woman. "Why are you not there?" "Because I have heard what is coming. The House of Owls never lies. My family and I are leaving for Tregaron as soon as we have enough supplies. You should all turn around." With that, the woman bundled her fabrics and goods and disappeared down an alley. "What was that?" Ferrin asked, the language unknown to her ears. "Something about a traitor." Asher was trying to put the puzzle together. "That was not all she said," Selim stated, his body angled for the street that led to the heart of the city. "Selim," the ranger warned, "we don't have time. We need to get our supplies and move on. Use this to our advantage." It was already too late, and Asher could see the fear in Salim's eyes. The old honor guard knew of two traitors inside Karath's walls, and both were his sons. Asher had heard him talk of both Halion and Torin many times over the years, often with pride in his tone. That's why when Selim made a dash down the street, Asher wasn't surprised. "What's happening?" Rayna pulled her horse forward, leaving Nathaniel behind. Asher growled, thinking of his knees. "He's getting all of us killed." The ranger ran after Selim, pulling Hector along as he did, with the others closely behind, each as confused as the other. The streets became more crowded the further in they ventured, slowing their pursuit with the horses in tow. Asher pushed and shoved at the building crowd, and turned down several alleys in the hope of catching up, but Selim knew the city like the back of his hand. The noise found the ranger's ears first, then the smell, before the real crowd could be seen. It appeared that most of Karath had turned out to hear their boy emperor and see the traitor. A gap appeared in the wall of bodies, and Asher reluctantly took advantage of both his demeanor and Hector's girth. The companions pushed through until they found Selim, who was standing still in front of the palace gates. Instinctively, Asher's eyes were drawn to the guards beyond Selim and the gates. They didn't appear all too bothered by the amassing crowds and the lack of security for their approaching emperor. In fact, most weren't even watching the crowd, but instead looking up at the palace itself. Then he saw it, the spectacle that had drawn so many. Asher's hold on Hector's reins became slack, and he sighed in despair for his friend. No father should ever live to see their son pass on before them, let alone be hung from the palace walls and streaked in blood. The ranger knew a tortured body when he saw one.
"What's all this about, then?" Doran huffed. "I can't see a bloody thing. Asher!"
Phelan said his name in a harsh tone over the noisy mob.
"What's happening? Who is that?"
The other rangers had crowded around now, almost shutting out the mob as they surrounded Salim from behind. The old honor guard had yet to move, allowing strangers to jostle him in the fight to get a better look.
"Asher?" Nathaniel prompted.
Asher locked eyes with Glade for just a second, both men aware of what was about to happen next.
"It's Halion al-Anan, Salim's son."
Rayna gasped and covered her mouth, but the others remained silent, the gravity of the situation slowly sinking in. Asher noticed the barbarian Bale puff out his chest and adjust the angle of his shoulders so he could quickly reach for the axes that rested there. Glade's hand coiled around the slender hilt of his fine sword, while Doran, son of Dorian, cracked his knuckles in anticipation. Hadivad was whispering in his apprentice's ear, who quickly retrieved her staff from the side of her horse. There was a call above the din of the mob, and a stilted cheer from the crowd. Emperor Farah was sat in the middle of what appeared to be an oversized throne, carried by four slaves and lined with honor guards. The procession led out from the palace, through the gardens, between the main entrance and the gates in front of the rangers. Something about the honor guards didn't look right to Asher. "Start clearing a way out," the ranger addressed Nathaniel and the elves with urgency. "Glade!" The dark-skinned ranger nodded in agreement and rolled his shoulders in preparation. Pulling Salim out of the crowd without bloodshed wasn't going to be easy. They were too late. The rage that spilled from Salim's mouth was without definition or syllable. It was hate in its purest form, born of the deepest pit that lay dormant in every soul. Something inside Salim snapped, and he shoved those in front of him aside and sprinted for the gates. The rangers yelled his name in protest, but there was no stopping him. Not even elven speed could get in front of him now. With his cutlass drawn ready, the old honor guard entered the palace grounds with the fury of a hurricane. The guards who had been too occupied with the sight of Halion were the first to fall, each taking a beating that dropped them hard and fast. The honor guards formed a wall in front of their emperor, and the slaves carrying the boy immediately reversed direction. That was when Asher saw it. The subtleties that made these guards stand out. The way they moved. The way they carried themselves. They were Arrakesh.
"Salim!"
The ranger's cry fell on deaf ears. The southern ranger jumped with his cutlass aimed low, ready to skewer the first person to get in his way. The Arrakesh were typically fast, however. Salim's sword was deflected, and his next three attacks either collided with steel or found naught but air. A solid push-kick had one of the assassins flying over the low hedge, reducing his opponents to five. That was at least two too many when it came to the Arrakesh. With a battle cry of his own, Asher waded into the fray, hoping, if nothing else, to distract the remaining Arrakesh. His double-handed broadsword cut the air horizontally and pushed through the defense of one assassin and opened his armor up. The blade had drawn blood, but it wasn't enough to put the assassin out of the fight. A swift backhand, however, had his spiked pommel knock the helmet and break the jaw of another Arrakesh. Salim twirled and spun like a dancer, quickly finishing the man with a clean swipe across his throat. More cries of battle preceded the other rangers, who charged up the path with weapons drawn. Doran had left his stubby fat blade attached to his hog, instead opting for the spiked gauntlets that matched his armor. The dwarf darted between the clashing of steel and dived through the air until his momentum and tremendous girth took down an assassin. Without taking a breath, Doran pummeled the man until blood decorated his blonde beard, and the Arrakesh became very still beneath him. Despite having been already sliced by the assassin's blades in various places, Bale of the Oakbreaker clan moved through the group with his double-sided axes and a smile on his face. Glade was forced more than once to duck under the barbarian's swing while simultaneously parrying the blade of an Arrakesh. It was only a minute more before the six assassins were lying dead at the ranger's feet. Salim remained crouched over his last victim, with his dagger in hand. The ranger repeatedly stabbed the dead body with a rage-filled cry that would give any attacker pause. Asher pulled his own sword free of his opponent's neck and looked about, assessing their environment through labored breaths. Like ants hurrying from their nests, guards and Arrakesh
came from everywhere, running out of the palace and appearing throughout the gardens. A bell rang in the distance, telling Asher that more would be coming from across the city.
"Withdraw!" Glade shouted. "We need to withdraw!"
Still, Selim continued to stab the dead body. Asher knew they had only seconds to choose their fate. Stay and fight, killing as many as they could, and avenging Halion's death, or run back into the city and attempt escape. The ranger didn't need to count the number of enemies to calculate the outcome of a stance. They would certainly reduce the Karathan army by day's end, but their own death would be inevitable. Then again, running away didn't hold much hope either. Karath was a maze of alleyways and colorful bazaars, each blending into the next with disorientating effect. The amassing guards and assassins broke Selim's concentration, and he finally replaced the dagger for his cutlass. The look on his face told Asher everything he needed to know. The old honor guard would not be sated until he had killed every last one. Glade was the first to act, sheathing his fine blade and diving on top of Selim. The men struggled furiously until Asher and Doran intervened, each hooking an arm around the southerner's shoulders and tugging backwards.
"We need to go, Selim," Glade shouted in his ear.
Asher could see the nearest assassin bearing down on them.
"Bail!"
The big barbarian moved to intercept the Arrakesh, but was too slow for the actions of an elf. Rayna unleashed an arrow from her powerful bow and launched the assassin back into a group of soldiers. The arrow continued its flight, piercing armor, flesh, and bone with ease, until it buried itself in the palace walls and cracked the sandy stone. The elf's barrage was accompanied by Nathaniel's arrows and Phelan's spells. Their combined attack was perfect, with Rayna taking down the assassins who could evade Nathaniel's arrows, while the knight fell Karathan guards. Phelan was far happier to create chaos with explosive spells.
"Come on!"
Asher strained against Salim's pull. Doran pushed from the front as Glade and Asher pulled at Salim's arms, but blind rage gave the southerner the strength of 10 men. Thankfully, any who survived the arrows flying between their heads were tackled by Bale, who was more than happy to add notches to his axes.
"Selim, we need to go!"
Glade had one hand on the ranger's wrist, keeping his sword at bay. More arrows whistled past their struggling bodies, each finding their mark and littering the palace grounds with bodies. Rayna's arrows never failed to bring down more than one attacker at a time.
"Bale!"
Asher met the barbarian's eyes and looked from him to Selim. The Oakbreaker knew exactly what to do.
Bale's fist connected with Salim's face to devastating effect.
The ranger's nose broke instantly, and his head snapped back, as his legs gave out beneath him. Asher and Glade were suddenly holding his entire weight, and Doran had both of his hands cupping the southerner's face, searching for signs of life.
"Did you kill him?"
the dwarf asked.
"He sleep,"
the barbarian replied, before turning about to clothesline a Russian guard. Asher looked up from Selim, and saw Death walking out of the palace. Billowing white robes swept around the ancient elf, contrasting with his long black hair which draped over his back like oil. The ranger's eyes were immediately drawn to Aladir's short sword, resting on his hip with a crystallized pommel. Its twin was sitting diagonally across Asher's back, begging to be returned to its master. The old assassin had every intention of giving it back. The two locked eyes across the gardens between the oncoming guards and Arrakesh, each aware of their inevitable collision.
"Bale, take Selim."
Asher and Glade lifted the southerner into the barbarian's hands, who threw him over his shoulder as if he were an empty sack.
"Asher?"
Glade was following the ranger's gaze.
"Don't, Asher,"
Rayna cried. "We need to go, now." The ranger wasn't sure when it happened, but both of his hands were now holding a sword each. In his right hand was the silvery short sword, crafted in a dwarven forge and decorated in the oldest of runes, while in his left he held a blade gifted to Aladir by Valinus himself. The pommel housed a crystal imbued with the power of Nias, the god of magic. Asher was yet to be convinced of the gods and their power, but he more than believed in his power to shove the jeweled pommel down the elf's throat. For a lathe. Asher ignored the warnings and went to work. He didn't care what Aladir was doing in Karath, or what part the Arrakesh had to play in everything. They had killed Halion, the son of a friend and a good man, but the elf had taken a life that actually mattered to Asher, a young woman who should have been left to grow old and discover the wonders of the world. The first Arrakesh to get in his way was dead by the ranger's second strike, both blades opening up arteries. A Carathan guard came next, if somewhat hesitant, and found the pommel of Asher's silver sword lodged in his throat, stealing any breath. A swift push-kick launched the man into three more guards, staggering their advance, while the ranger deflected and parried more assassins. One particular Arrakesh struck from above with more force than the other, his blade shattered against the elven shortsword. Asher simply dropped to one knee and thrust his silver blade into the man's chest. It had been a while since the ranger had been in the thick of a fight, but the art of killing always returned like an old friend. He was no longer aware of everyone else, the rangers or the elves, but focused instead on carving out a path to Aladir. Guards and assassins alike dropped around him, as each of his fine blades cut through their armor and defenses with the ease of a knife through butter. His green cloak flowed around him, whipped about by the dance of battle, his sword singing the oldest of tunes. Without warning, small pellets exploded across the gardens and filled the space with thick, grey smoke. Where the ranger had only seen red was now concealed with rising fog. As Aladir's image disappeared, Asher's rage deflated, and a reasonable mind took back control. "Asher!" Nathaniel's voice carried over the chaos. The ranger turned around and saw Hadavad enter through the gates with Atharia and four men in what appeared to be white owl masks. The men in masks were all wearing light armor and hoods, and they were all throwing pellets. "I believe these young men intend to help us," Hadavad called casually. "This way," one of the owls beckoned. Asher could see Bale charging out of the grounds, with Salim slung over his shoulder. Glade and Doran were close behind, but they kept a wary eye on Asher. The ranger knew that if he decided to stay and fight, they would fight with him. Phelan was tugging at Rayna's arm, who continued to fire arrows into the wall of smoke with Nathaniel. The old assassin had a lasting look into the smoke, and knew it would be only moments before Aladir emerged, and with him, a small army of assassins and soldiers. Asher would be condemning them all to death if he stayed, just as Salim had done in his blind rage. Seconds later, his decision made, they were all out of the gates and mounting their horses once again. The crowd had already dispersed, but those left behind dove for cover to avoid the charging steeds. Asher looked over his shoulder before they turned a corner and saw Aladir stride out of the smoky courtyard with his short sword in hand. The companions followed the directions of the men in owl masks, each astride one of the ranger's mounts, until they came across the south gate. Three Carathan guards stood duty with spears in hand, the perfect weapon for dismounting a rider. Asher reached for his broadsword, still feeling the rush of the fight coursing through his veins. Oddly, the guards simply nodded at the owls and stepped aside, allowing them all to leave the city unhindered. The ranger inspected their faces as he rode by, and saw Halion al-Anan in all of them. Soon the companions were riding out into the desert, with the dust clouds steadily rising behind them. The horses were pushed hard, and Asher wondered if they would be followed across the flat terrain. Their destination was obvious to any who might be observing from Karath's high walls. Phelan rode up beside the ranger and shouted over the deafening hoofs. "That was Aladir Yalathanil. Why is he here?" Asher had no answer for her, but for a simple grimace and a glance at the crystal pommel poking over his shoulder. Indeed, the elf's presence was curious, if not maddening. Scylla's gate stood defiantly before them, wedged between the Undying Mountains as an unmovable sentinel. Asher had seen it before, but never had he approached the ancient gate and taken in its true size. It took several minutes on horseback to reach the base and discover the details. Asher pulled on Hector's reins and had to crane his neck to see it all. The color was closer to bronze by the ranger's eyes and entirely covered in runes. There wasn't an inch of the gate that didn't have ancient glyphs engraved into the metal. There was a clear divide up the middle, but the whole gate was concave in shape and apparently devoid of any hinges. There were no bolts across the threshold, but the gate was clearly locked in place with magic. On either side stood a complex framework of walkways, stairs, and ladders constructed from wood. They reached to the very top and connected with the gate, where Carathans had once kept watch over the southern passage. "Who are these men?" Phelan came up on his right and looked at the owls who had jumped down from the horses.
Scylla's gate. Rayner left no room for answers, coming up on the ranger's left.
I have longed to see this, ever since I was a girl.
Asher, Felin pressed, ever cautious. The ranger took immediate note of the men and women appearing from behind some of the larger rocks and the wooden framework.
I think we're about to find out.
The four owls walked up to the amassing group and addressed the young man in the lead. Asher instinctively took the measure of the man, adorned with a flowing if ragged black cloak and covered from head to toe in worn brown leather. The warrior was olive-skinned, like his kinsmen, and carried himself with confidence. Despite his solid appearance, Asher could see the cracks. This was a man who had seen the end of a beating and felt the sting of a blade more than once. Blades of all sizes were sheathed on his person, with a particularly elegant dagger strapped across his chest. There was only one person this could be.
"I am Torin, son of Nun," the young man announced with authority. His confidence faltered when his scrutinizing gaze found Salim's limp body over Bale's saddle.
The son of Nun made to inspect Salim, but found his path suddenly blocked.
Asher jumped down from Hector and faced the head of the owls.
"We need shelter, Torin, son of Nun."
The ranger could see the alarm across the man's face, unsure if he was standing before enemies.
"I am Asher, a friend to your father."
"As are we all, laddie," Torin added from atop his warthog.
Torin was stunned, if his silence was anything to go by. Rayner approached from behind Asher, her melodic voice preceding her. "Salim needs somewhere to rest, especially before the midday sun finds us. Do you have shelter?"
Torin caught himself, instantly taken by Rayner's beauty and calming nature.
"Bring him this way. The House of Owls offers shelter to all in need of it."
Asher nodded his appreciation and released his grip on the broadsword within his cloak. His fingers had only sought the weapon when Rayner came between them, a new protective instinct that had apparently awoken within him. Thankfully, Torin was proving an ally, as Asher would have been ready to cut the young man down had he posed a threat to the princess.
Chapter 25 Sanctuary.
Gideon sat with his legs crossed by the edge of the shore, his eyes closed. The view across the central lake was often breathtaking, surrounded by the floating boulders and crowned with a magnificent waterfall. But it had proven a distraction for the young mage. He had to close the world off amid distractions, Adriel had said. If Gideon became lost in the flow of conversation between the dragons, it could spell his end if they were flying.
"Focus."
Adriel was slowly circling the young man, his feet lightly crunching against the pebbles. "Know Ilargo's voice as if it were your own." Gideon could feel Ilargo's presence, both physically and mentally. This connection had magnified over the last couple of days, as if the dragon was pressing upon him on purpose now. The mage could feel Ilargo's scaly exterior against his skin, despite the fact that the green dragon was resting atop one of the lower floating boulders. Their minds were reaching out into the void and merging as one, only this time Gideon was in control of the flow.
"Gideon."
Ilargo's voice was soothing and somehow familiar. Gideon had never known his parents, but he imagined hearing their voices would be similar. Ilargo felt like family, a bond that was only strengthened by their mental bleed. The dragon was delving into Gideon's memories, creating the impression that he had been in the mage's life since the beginning. Gideon wanted to push into Ilargo's memories, but he hesitated, thinking about his recent dreams.
"Look. You must look."
Ilargo's voice was filled with trust and confidence. Gideon felt his physical surroundings melt away, along with the sound of Adriel's pacing. The mage saw the green dragon in his infancy, keeping close to Rainel, his mother. He saw Ilargo's first flight, which amusingly ended with the dragon flying headfirst into one of the floating boulders. The first time he breathed fire was in his sleep, while dreaming. The dragon had woken up in a coughing fit and set the nearest tree ablaze. Gideon could feel himself smiling at the scene as he watched Rainel breathe ice over the hot bark. A great sense of vertigo overtook Gideon's senses when he looked at Rainel, the Emerald Star. Her deep blue eyes drew him in, and before he could stop himself, the mage was falling through the sky again. Beneath him was the same battle he had witnessed before, with an army of men on the ground and a swarm of dragons above. Gideon still didn't recognize the banners, or even the castle that fought off the dragons, What he could see was green crystals being erected along the walls on giant spears. The chrysalith turned the dragons away before they could inflict any damage to the stone.
Gideon!
Ilago's voice reversed Gideon's fall, and the battle blurred into darkness, until the mage was lying under a canopy of stars. Ilago was there, standing regal against the backdrop of infinity. Soft grass was under them, but the horizon had no end, with only the stars for company.
"Where are we?"
he asked. There was no moon or sun, yet the two were easy to see, their silhouettes blocking out the stars as they moved. Ilago looked down at him.
"This is our place,
a place where dragon and dragorn may dwell together, regardless of distance or constraint. This is a place where you and I will always meet." Gideon's eyes welled with tears at the sound of Ilago's voice, every syllable resounding inside his mind, as if it had come from his own thoughts.
"This kind of bond takes most dragorn decades to master. Most elven dragorn, that is."
"I don't understand." Gideon was still trying to make sense of all the things he had seen. Has there ever been a human dragorn? And what is that battle I keep seeing? Is it the Dragon War?"
"You have a lot of questions, but the answers will have to wait. I'm afraid what is about to happen next is going to be quite jarring."
Before Gideon could ask his next question, the starry surroundings were ripped away with an explosion of sense and pain. The mage was suddenly back on the shore of the lake and falling flat against the pebbled ground. His face stung, specifically his right cheek. Adriel was standing over him in a threatening fashion. Gideon had a question on the edge of his lips when the ancient elf buried his leg in the mage's ribs, sending him across the beach. The pain brought anger, and the anger had Gideon reaching for his staff. It wasn't on his back. It was resting against a tree 30 feet away, beyond Adriel, who was quickly advancing on him. The mage drew Abigail's wand from the holster on his thigh and let fly a concussive spell designed to knock the elf back. Adriel batted the attack away with a defensive spell of his own and countered with a roundhouse kick, accurate enough to strike Gideon's wrist beneath his palm and send the wand flying away.
"What are you doing?"
Gideon managed, just before the elf hammered him with fist, elbow, and foot. When the mage finally found his feet again and the world regained its sharper edges, Gideon located Adriel coming up behind him. The elf countered every backhand and punch, often following up with an attack that found one of the mage's nerve clusters. Every blow was developed to inflict maximum pain. In moments, Gideon was once again on the ground, gasping in pain.
"Why are you doing this?
The Dragorn were the greatest warriors in the realm, even above the High Guardian and his most experienced fighters." Adriel circled Gideon, a predator circling its prey.
"You must learn the ways of Magdareth, a martial arts known only to the Dragorn.
You could have waited until after the meditation." Gideon wiped some blood from his lip. "In time, you'll need to learn how to be there and here at the same time. Did Ilago not warn you of my attack?" Adriel lunged again and set upon the mage with a flurry of exotic moves. Gideon was successful in blocking some, but the elf always found a way of using his defenses against him. The melee ended with Gideon on the ground again. The mage looked up at Ilago, perched on the boulder.
"He wasn't entirely forthcoming," he groaned.
"You have seen Mornblade," Adriel continued. "All Dragorn carried a sword, but seldom was it required. If our words failed to defuse a situation, and our opponent was stupid enough to ignore the presence of a dragon, the art of Magdareth was enough to disarm or incapacitate them." Gideon stood up and brushed the dirt off his leather jacket. The mage was only doing it to appear busy, however. Without warning, he launched himself at Adriel. His time in Korkanath had instructed him in many ways of fighting, though without his staff or wand, he was limited.
"Stop!"
Adriel held up his hand to halt the mage in his tracks. "I can see that some of the basics will need to be addressed."
"I know how to fight," Gideon protested.
"Not like this. Magdareth is about control, detachment. Every move is measured and deliberate." The elf stood to the side, facing the lake, and fell into a series of slow movements. His arms and legs created shapes in the air, and his robe swept about him. Gideon came alongside Adriel and began to copy his movements. All the while, Ilago watched from above.
He could feel the dragon's gaze, taking in everything the mage did with great interest.
"You must continue to commune with Ilaga while you train. Your connection is the most important thing.
Every time I connect with Ilaga, I see the same thing."
"You see the war," Adriel replied, without looking, always moving.
"Yes, a great battle, with Raynal and Maliath. Even Galganophan is there. Which doesn't make sense. He was already dead when the Dragon War began, wasn't he?"
"Keep up," Adriel insisted, noticing Gideon fall behind with the movements.
"You're seeing Raynal's memories, passed on to Ilaga. You see now the weight that lies on your shoulders, on all Dragorn? You can see through the eyes of the oldest beings in Verda. This gift will allow you to see into the past, to see things mortals and immortals were never meant to glimpse."
"But what war am I seeing?"
Gideon quickly flung his jacket to the ground and fell back into his movements.
"The First War." Gideon dropped one of the movements in his confusion.
"The First War? There have only ever been two wars worthy of history's note. The Dark War and the Dragon War. I've never heard of any First War."
"The First War was never recorded, though I suspect if one was brave enough to enter the Wild Moors, you would find something relating to it. Your people have always been avid artists when it comes to history-taking, cave drawings and the like."
"I don't follow," Gideon said. "The Wild Moors? In Ilion? What do the Outlanders have to do with the First War?"
"It is a piece of history that should only be told by one who was there. I think Ilargo's memories will suffice."
Gideon looked up at Ilaga, his scales glittering in the falling light. The dragon's long neck craned over the lip of the boulder, and the mage could feel their connection becoming tangible. Before any exchange could take place, Raynal the Emerald Star glided down from the heavens and gracefully landed atop the same boulder, her wingspan easily larger than the rock's width. Gideon wasn't entirely privy to their conversation, but he got a single word from Ilaga and a feeling of excitement.
"Hunt."
Mother and son took off from the boulder and flew high into the sky until they were too small to see. Gideon felt deflated at Ilargo's sudden departure and stopped his movements.
"Never get in the way of a dragon's hunt," Adriel advised. "Your questions will have to wait."
"But Ilaga said that distance was not a concern when we were in our place."
Gideon had no idea how to describe the starry paradise he and Ilaga had occupied.
Now Adriel stopped as well.
"You have formed a sanctuary?"
"Interesting." The elf mused over his thoughts for a moment before standing in front of him.
"Again, you will know the movements until your muscles no longer require your mind to perform them."
By the time the moon rose and the lake became a mirror for the stars, Gideon was exhausted. He sat with his back to a rock and enjoyed the comfort of being able to rest his head. Galinor had made a modest fire and caught a pair of rabbits, which were currently cooking over the fire and making Gideon's stomach rumble. Every muscle ached from the practice movements and the sparring in between. Adriel, who never grew tired, had kept the mage going all day. But in truth, Gideon was more aware of Ilargo's absence. It created a void inside of him that hadn't required filling until now.
"So," Galinor began as he stoked the flames, "has Adriel given you any idea what all this training is for?"
Gideon didn't even have the energy to frown.
"To be a Dragorn, of course."
"Yes, but why? Why have the responsibility of being a Dragorn if you do nothing with it but stay here, in paradise?"
Galinor's tone suggested he didn't quite believe that last part.
"Dragorn were the peacekeepers, not gardeners."
"Well, from the sound of it, I'll be dead before my training is complete anyway, so what does it matter?"
"It matters because we finally have a way out."
Galinor had the expression of a man who had been wronged.
"Adalandra is still our priority, is she not?"
Gideon found the energy to lift his head and look at the elf.
"Galinor, think about it. If she is still alive, our priority is to warn Ilion. Darkerkin invade from the south, and your own people will invade from the east. Adalandra would tell you herself that the dragons are our only hope. We need to convince them that flying to Ilion is—"
"She sacrificed herself so we could escape.
To find the dragons and stop all of Verda from falling into ruin."
Gideon could feel his appetite fading away as they fell into awkward silence.
Galinor hung his head, his fair features cast in shadow.
"I have to do something, Gideon. I have to save someone. All I've ever done is take life and fight and then fight some more. Rescuing Adalandra is the first thing I've ever thought to do that was right. She isn't just the queen. She is the ruler my people need. If the elves are left as they are, they will be nothing but killers for eternity." Gideon caught a glimpse of a rogue tear running down Galinor's cheek. How fate had toyed with the major's emotions, that he had gone from wishing the elf dead to wanting nothing more than to help him. Gideon wanted Galinor to have that opportunity at redemption and become the great elf that lay under all those centuries of misguided training. Adelandra's potential captivity was also bearing down on the mage, and he desperately wanted to help her, but he wasn't nearly trained enough to march up to Maliath and ask the Black Dragon if he felt like burning down Malaesai. Without Adriel's blessing, they were stuck in Dragon's reach for the time being. "We will find the road we are meant to take, Galinor. Together we will leave this place, find Adelandra, and save the kingdoms of man and elf alike. But we must have patience, just for now." Galinor had the hint of a smile in the corner of his mouth. "You're already sounding like a Dragorn." The two shared a laugh and ate together until sleep found them both. Sleep never found Adelandra. After a day of slaughtering Darkerkin gladiators in the baking sun, she had been fed and taken straight to the baths. The guards stood watching over her, while two female slaves went through the usual routine of scrubbing her so she could be presented to the goddess. They had already pricked her with one of the darts before dragging her to the bath, and another dose would be administered before the queen was deposited in the goddess's bedchambers. This was her only window of opportunity. There was no green crystal in the bathhouse, as the drugs always kept her docile enough, but the binding spell between herself and Ollie, Rayna's owl, was deeper, instinctual magic that required very little effort. Relaxing into the warm waters and allowing the slaves to clean her gave her the state of mind to fall into the spell. It was dark and very warm where the owl was. Adelandra could sense that the animal was hunting and becoming frustrated with the lack of prey. A mental suggestion had Ollie return to his master and give up the hunt for now. Adelandra had to control her emotions, lest she give herself away to the guards, as the owl turned about to face a landmark the queen had not seen since she was a child. Rayna was at Scylla's gate. The owl glided in, heading towards the scattered campfires and pyres. The princess welcomed Ollie to her side and gave him an affectionate stroke that Adelandra wished she could feel. The owl's big black eyes settled on Rayna, and her mother took her in, a sense of pride and fear mixing together in her gut. Her daughter had changed, that was clear to see. Where a naive and unsure girl had once been, was now replaced with a warrior, filled with confidence and serenity. Rayna was sitting next to Nathaniel, the knight that had accompanied her since arriving in Ilion. Adelandra could find no fault in the man, and considered her daughter to be an excellent judge of character. But her gaze was stuck on her daughter. Her fine clothes had been replaced with tough leathers, and her belt adorned with an elven scimitar and daggers. Adelandra knew those weapons had come from Phelan, her most trusted friend. More than anything, Adelandra wanted to embrace her daughter and hear all about her adventures and the incredible feats she achieved in her absence. But the gods demanded more of her than the responsibilities she held as a queen or a mother. The echoes of fate could not be denied. The time of their fall was coming, and the elf could feel it in her bones. It was this faith that kept her strong in the dark, a faith that would not let her give up yet. She would continue to go through the motions of fighting in the arena and sleeping with whichever Darkerkin was required of her to survive the night. In the end, they would all die. She would see to that. For now, Adelandra just wanted to enjoy the sight of her daughter before the drugs took complete hold of her. She could already feel the link with Ollie slipping away, and her sense of self becoming numb. The drugs left her susceptible to persuasion, no matter the command and its consequences. The rage she let free upon the goddess previously had now been forged into a quiet fury, as if the sun itself had settled in her chest. Adelandra refused to give in to what her husband called their natural instincts, but the righteous anger that had built up inside of her would never leave her, not until the goddess and all of Malaesai was ash. Soon, she thought. She believed in Gideon and Galinor and their ability to find the dragons. After they had saved Ilion and the dragons brought an end to Valens's machinations, they would surely return to Ada's south and rid the land of the Darkerkin once and for all. In truth, that future felt a long way away,
But before it could overwhelm Adelandra, the drugs finally kicked in, and she lost the ability to care about anything. At least there was some reprieve in that.
Chapter 26 Sentinel.
It was a still night in the arid lands, without a cloud in the sky, and a bitter chill in the air. Torrin, son of Nun, a Karathan, a native to the desert, took no notice of the weather, his attention entirely fixed on Salim. Inside the makeshift barracks, built centuries ago at the base of Scylla's Gate, father and son shared the edge of a canvas cot. The two had sat in silence for some time, after embracing each other, neither knowing exactly what to say.
"He was brave," Torrin whispered.
"Every day of his life, Halin was brave. He had enough courage and faith for the both of us."
"I should..."
Salim had fresh tears flowing down his face. "I should have shown him a different life, one without fighting and bloodshed." Torrin put an arm around his adoptive father's shoulder and pulled him in. The old honor guard still had the blood of assassins and Karathan guards in his hair. The son of Nun held him for another minute and wept with Salim.
"Tell me everything," Salim finally managed. "I need to know everything."
"As I told your companions, the New Dawn has taken control of Karath's resources."
"The New Dawn?"
"An old religion devoted to an elf called Valinus." Torrin saw the recognition in his father's eyes, as it had with the others. "They have been secretly ruling the Empire for centuries. There are two elves in league with the Arrakesh who appear to have taken control. They are the ones who killed Halion." Torrin had visualized killing all of them. They were responsible for Halion's death and the death of so many elves. "As we speak, an army of Darkerkin savages advance on Scylla's Gate." Torrin gave Salim a moment to absorb that. "It's part of some plan that would see all of Verda fall under Valens' fist, not just the Empire. We have to hold them here."
"I should never have left."
Salim sat up and leant on his knees, burying his head between his legs.
"You had no choice."
"There is always a choice, Torrin. I should have taught Halin that years ago. I should have taught you both. Instead, I left you here to fight."
"I made a choice," Torrin replied softly, "as did Halion. We chose to fight for what is right. The Empire doesn't work. It is built upon the broken backs of slaves. Its foundations are rotten and its hierarchy corrupted. While I fought in the streets, Halion fought where it really mattered. He spent years converting the soldiers to our way of thinking, whilst influencing the highborn families. He didn't always win, but I was there to watch his back, and he mine."
Salim looked up at him with glistening eyes, though his voice was full of judgment.
"And what choice have you made now? You man the gate, and you incite open war with the Arrakesh. This is a fool's errand. If the plans you speak of are true, those elves will march the entire Karathan army and all of the Arrakesh out here to kill everyone. You don't have the numbers."
Torrin could feel his mood switch instantly.
"Numbers? This isn't about numbers or strategy. We stand and fight for the entire realm. It was you who taught me about honor, honor guard. Have you lost yours during your time in the wilds of Ilion?"
"Yes, I have."
Salim stood up and paced like a caged lion.
"I was stripped of my honor and exiled, remember? My time as a ranger has taught me about the importance of survival and the life that can be achieved without some sense of honor. There is no honor in death, Torrin. It's just death."
"How can you say that?"
Torrin was on his feet now. "Your son hangs from the palace walls because he died doing what was right, what was honorable."
Salim turned away and placed both of his hands against the cool wall. The two men stood in silence, their heavy breathing filling the room. This was not the reunion Torrin had dreamed of for so long.
"Forgive me."
Salim slowly slid down the wall and crumpled to his knees.
"Please forgive me."
Through his fresh tears and matted hair, Torrin couldn't tell if he was talking to him or Halion.
"I should never have left him."
Torrin couldn't help but weep with his adoptive father, the sight of him diffusing any anger that burned inside of him. The son of Nun crouched by his side, and the two embraced again, remaining there for some time. Asher wandered through the makeshift camp, his eyes taking in these owls and their weapons. Those who weren't manning the top of the gate or the scaffolding were huddled around small fires, sharing stories and scraps of food. They weren't much to look at, and their leathers were light, with too many visible gaps to really be called armor. Still, they had apparently attacked the palace and fought Arrakesh and Carathan guards alike. Those who were still alive before him deserved some credit. Looking up, and the ranger had to really crane his neck, he could see the pyres lit atop the gate. They had doomed themselves by lighting them. Everyone in Carath would be able to see them. Not that it mattered. Their presence would bring hell down upon them all. Aladir would no doubt seek an audience with Asher, wishing to learn the real location of Paldora's gem. Such a relic could not easily be forgotten, even with a shard in Valinus's possession. The ranger returned to the small fire on the edge of the camp, the furthest point from the gate, where his companions had found rest. They were all discussing the revelations delivered to them by Torin, son of Nun.
"I don't believe it," Doran snorted. "Darkakin march in north? Sounds like bollocks to me." "It doesn't matter," Asher interjected. "We need to leave. Nightfall is east of here." The ranger could see Rayner's face falling into protest. "If we stay, we're exposed. Carathan soldiers and assassins to the north, Darkakin to the south now. We need to head east before we're trapped here."
"He's right," Nathaniel agreed. "We didn't come here to fight an army of Darkakin, or the Carathans for that matter. We need to reach nightfall and recover the gem. Win the war, not the battle."
"No," Rayner was standing now. "We can't allow the Darkakin to breach those gates. Their arrival must be Valinus's way of securing war in Ilion. There is still hope for our people finding peace, but the Darkakin will bring chaos. How can we stand by and do nothing? The gods have brought us here for a reason.
Look around, princess."
Asher's tone was harsher than he meant it to be.
"If the Darkakin really are coming this way, the gods have delivered us to our deaths. We few cannot fight off an entire army of savages on one side and an army of trained Carathans on the other. It cannot be done."
"It cannot be done?" Rayner echoed incredulously. "I saw you stand in the gates of Westphalian and defy death time and time again."
"That was when I had the ring."
Asher couldn't seem to lighten his tone. "Without the gem, I die just as easily as everyone else, something you will witness if we linger here."
"I hope to never see that."
Rayna's soft but genuine tone disarmed Asher immediately. All eyes fell on the ranger. Asher's apology never found his lips, for that extra sense, which would forever attune him to the Arrakesh, tugged at his attention. The ranger flicked his head to the right, and he scanned the darkness between Scylla's gate and Carath. The elves were the first to catch on, also detecting the intruders. It was Asher's alarm, however, which had the other rangers and Nathaniel on their feet in seconds, all weapons drawn. Their combined commotion had the owls on alert, and they too came to their feet, every one gazing into the dark. Without a sound, the shadows gave birth to a single row of Arrakesh, 12 by Asher's count. The assassins' approach was slow, and their short swords remained on their backs. Each was blindfolded behind red cloth, though completely aware of their surroundings. They would already know who among them was injured by the taste of blood in the air, or how many arrows were aimed at them by the sound of the individual bowstrings. Rodosan stepped in front of the other assassins across the shadows, his facial scars and square jaw setting him apart from the younger, fresher faces. His grey goatee and razored hair had yet to change over the years. Asher kept his hands relaxed by his side as he too stepped in front of his companions.
"It could have been you standing where I am now," Rose said. "But you didn't have the balls to see this life through. So now you're going to die, alongside your friends."
Asher didn't want to waste his breath bartering words with the killer.
"You're here to deliver a message, or we wouldn't be talking at all."
Rose smirked, twisting his old scars.
"Do you want to know how he died, Nasta Nal Akit? You were close, weren't you? He brought you to Nightfall all those years ago, trained you personally, like a father."
Asher clenched his jaw, but remained in place. Nasta's own training ever present in his life. He wouldn't give Ro the satisfaction of rising to the bait. It was true that of all people, Nasta had been the closest thing to a father figure, but their relationship was an extraordinary one. The same man who kept him close and protected him also beat him and subjected him to awful torments, all in the name of Nightfall.
He whimpered and begged like a dog, Roe continued.
The ranger gripped his broadsword, but kept it sheathed.
Roe chuckled to himself and balled both of his fists, while the other Arrakesh tensed, some even reaching for their swords.
All but one.
Asher noticed the assassin on Roe's left, a young man by his features, who never flinched.
"I bring word from Aladir Yalathanil," Roe finally announced. "You and the elves come back with us, and everyone else gets to live."
Asher could already see how futile that promise was. Aladir may permit the owls and the others to live, but the Darkinkin army would still march right on through and kill them all anyway. The only thing the ranger was considering was how best to send his rejection back to Aladir.
"That one."
Hadavad stepped forward and pointed his staff at the young assassin to Roe's left. Everyone turned to regard the old mage, curious as to what he was trying to say. Even the Arrakesh appeared somewhat confused. The young assassin did not.
"Hadavad?"
Asher inquired, his eyes never leaving Roe.
"That one is not what he seems," the mage continued. "I know possession when I see it."
Despite the blindfold, the young assassin regarded Hadavad with some intensity.
"How astute, for a human."
The young assassin stepped further into the firelight and removed his blindfold, abandoning it on the ground.
Roe swiveled on the man. "What are you?" "Silence!"
the young assassin hissed, his voice not quite his own. It was enough to give Roe Dossarn pause.
"We meet again, Ranger.
And you have something that belongs to me." Asher followed the young man's gaze to the crystal pommel over his shoulder, and instantly drew his broadsword.
"Aladir."
This was enough to set off the Arrakesh, who as one removed their twin short swords and fell into attacking stances, with Roe in the lead, eager as ever. The unique sound of Rayna's enchanted bow being pulled back was the last noise to resound across the desert. The possessed assassin held up his hand and smiled in the same eerie way as Aladir.
"Stop. There doesn't have to be blood. Not yet, anyway.
Accompany Roe back to the palace with the princess, and no one has to die."
"You want the gem,"
Asher said, as he fought the urge to remove the assassin's head from his body.
"You should have told me the truth in Alethia. Now I will have to extract the information at the expense of considerable pain."
"I am not unaccustomed to pain." Aladir smiled.
"Who said it would be your pain?"
The ranger glanced over his shoulder at Rayna and knew there and then that the night would end in bloodshed.
Phelan said, "You expect us to come with you knowing what you intend? Our legends credited you with more intelligence than this, Aladir."
Aladir looked directly at Rayna.
"I think if it means the lives of everyone here, you will run back to Karath if I command it."
Now Rayna stepped forward, her arrow still nocked as she lowered her aim.
"Then you have underestimated us, Aladir Yalathanil, as you did when I claimed this bow as my own."
The magical bow still glittered out of the firelight, as if the stars were trapped inside.
Aladir's smile was gone now.
"Your next words will decide the fate of everyone behind you, Princess Rayna. Choose them well."
Rayna matched his tone perfectly. "We will stand here and show you the difference a few can make. Not a single Darkerkin will set foot in these lands."
"You really think you can stop what's coming?
If we stand aside, you and your master would have Verda become an empire of dirt."
Aladir laughed to himself and grinned.
"And what would be wrong with that?
The world is made of dirt. Now imagine it without the stain of humanity, or even our own kin. A land made clean for the return of the gods."
The young assassin laughed again. "An empire of dirt indeed."
Doran's son of Dorian hefted his thick sword over his shoulder.
"You have our answer, pisspot."
The dwarf snorted and spat on the ground in front of the assassins.
"Are we getting to it or what?"
"Not tonight, Master Dwarf."
Aladir met Asher's eyes.
"Tonight you will need your rest. Tomorrow we will have our war, though I feel slaughter would be a better description."
One by one, the assassins melted back into the dark without a sound. Had Asher not been privy to their talents, he would have sworn it was magic. The last thing he saw was the wide smile on the young assassin's face before the shadows reclaimed him. It was another moment before the entire camp breathed again. Torrin had emerged with Salim and was already adding extra guard to the perimeter. Salim still appeared to be in a different world to everyone else, unfazed as he was. Asher turned around and looked upon Reyna with an impressed eye. There were not many who could stand up to Aladir Yalathanil, and even less when he was reinforced with Arrakesh. Then again, this was the same princess who had killed one of the Hand, a feat that had never been accomplished before. Their previous conversation not forgotten, Reyna stood in Asher's way. "Leave if you must, Ranger. Go to Nightfall and retrieve Paldora's gem. But I am staying here." With that, the princess replaced her arrow and walked away. Asher regretted his harsh words and tone, and knew there was still an apology to be given. Seeing the state of the perimeter guard, however, the ranger decided it would have to wait. "Glade, Doran, take the western watch. Hadafad, Atharia, the east. Bale..." The barbarian put his hand in Asher's face. "I do not take command from little man." The behemoth strode into the camp and started ordering the owls about. Selim was already walking back into the old barracks. Asher knew to give the man time, even if it had just become a very precious thing. He was bolstered by the knowledge that when the fighting started, Selim could finally be unleashed. "What shall we do?" Nathaniel asked. Asher didn't look to the knight, but instead bent down and picked up the discarded blindfold, left behind by the possessed assassin. He still loathed the feeling of it in his hands and the memories it invoked, but the knight's eye elixir still coursed through his veins, and it was an advantage he couldn't waste right now. "Make sure everyone gets some rest, and patrols are taken in turns. Work with this Torrin son of Nun. The owls take his command." Nathaniel raised his eyebrow. "And where are you going?" Asher proceeded to tie the blindfold around his eyes, until all the light was gone, and the world truly came to life in all its unseen detail. His senses were instantly heightened, and his heart rate increased as he took it all in. "I'm going out there." Asher nodded at the dark expanse between the gate and Carath. "Make sure we get some warning in case they come back. You think they might return before daybreak?" Asher strode out into the night. "I think every word out of Aladir's mouth is a lie." Chapter 27. Staying the Course. Aladir opened his eyes and found himself back in the palace, his spell at an end. He had been sat cross-legged in the middle of the balcony, where the Emperor would normally have his breakfast and enjoy his position above all others. The view from the palace offered the elf a vista of stars that watched over the city of Carath, now quiet and dimly lit. The atmosphere had changed in the city, and Aladir wondered if Nakir had made a mistake, hanging the young Halion from the walls. Still, the gods had delivered Asher back into his path. The ancient elf said a prayer to Atalan, the king of the gods, and thanked him for the favor. Now he could accomplish his task and retrieve the whole gem, empowering his master once more. Valinus's private mission was still on Aladir's mind, however. What had his master been looking for in Namdor's archives, and what was his interest in the lifeless isles? He didn't like his master having errands he wasn't aware of. Throughout the Dark War, the Hand, and especially Aladir, had been privy to all of Valinus's plans. "Faith," he heard his master say. He had to have faith in not only the gods, but also Valinus, their herald. He was to oversee the Darkerkin's arrival and find Paldora's gem. Nothing more. "I take it they refused?" Nakia strolled onto the balcony. "Of course." "Did any of your Arrakesh survive the refusal?" Nakir asked with some amusement in his tone. Aladir leaned on the railing and looked to the south, where Scylla's gate was now visible thanks to the torches and pyres. "You now control the Carathan army?" "I always have. The leaders who opposed the new dawn are dead." "Then prepare them to march on Scylla's gate." Aladir was already going through the coming battle. He would not be able to avoid this one. The elf was sure of his skill and had never backed away from confrontation, but his strength lied elsewhere. His brothers and sisters ran into battle perfectly, as though they were born for it, but Aladir preferred to take the battle in from afar and see the bigger picture. That would be impossible with the ranger now. He had to ensure the ranger's survival so he could question him until the gem was in his hands. Aladir trusted this to no one, not even Nakir, as his brother was often blinded by his desire to fight and the bloodshed that followed. The entire army will not be needed to take back the gate.